Is anybody out there? Can anybody hear us? Hey, so let's talk, bro. You hit me up with something exciting this morning. And I'll ask you the question because I already know the answer that I'll give. But who will have a better NBA career? Scoot Henderson or J-Dub, Jalen Williams?
Well, let's just give some background. Some douchebag. Popped on here, and of course he's not an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, which is totally cool. We're all for,
but that's one strike.
You know, all four other team guys jumping on here and being like, "Hey, we support you, whatever." But this dude comes in and says that he thinks that Chet would go 3 or 4 in this draft, which of course just sets me off because, like, how fucking dare you? Anyways, so
y'all want to fight?
I'm like, fuck you. So then I start thinking about this morning as I'm dropping my kids off at school, and I start thinking, like,
Keelan,
like, would I draft J-Dub knowing how well he played this season versus Scoot Henderson's G League? And I start thinking about that. Like, where would J-Dub go in this draft? If everybody knew how good J-Dub was, where would J-Dub go in this draft? And my point is that Scoot wouldn't go above J-Dub. And I'm watching Scoot's stuff. I've watched more Scoot Henderson's videotapes over the last 2 years than any other prospect we have. And I love Scoot because he reminds me a little bit of a Russ slash Morant with a jumping ability and a little bit of Russ. You know, like a combination of a point guard that is very rarely seen. But then I start looking at J-Dub and I start seeing this 6'6 guy who has a 7'2 wingspan who can play defense and offense, and it's known that he can do that at a very high level, guarding sometimes and most nights the best player on the floor. Not matter if he's a forward or if he's not doesn't matter if it's a forward or a guard, J-Dub has that player on lockdown. And I started realizing that, like, would I rather a Scoot Henderson at 6'2 that is going to be able to guard one position, maybe two positions effectively? Or would I rather a player like J-Dub that can guard 1 through 4? And of course, I love the defensive-minded set. So I started thinking about, like, would I rather J-Dub over Scoot just on the defense aspect? Yes. Okay. Just defense. There we go. Now you start looking at the offensive game and you start saying, what does Scoot need to improve on? Well, he's got to improve on his jump shot, his pull-up, some other things that are, you know, there. And then you start looking at J-Dub and, like, you see this glimpse of somebody that can shoot 40% from three-point range. You know, somebody that can shoot 65% from the field. And you start saying, like, who's going to be more effective, J-Dub or Scoot? And then I start thinking, I think J-Dub's going to be more of an effective player than Scoot is. So then it comes down to offense. Like, who's going to be a better offensive player? And since the NBA is built around offense, you start wondering who's going to be better in 5 years. Well, the reality is that when you're somebody the size of J-Dub going through the lane, right, you have a better chance of dominating the game being his size than you do having be someone the size of, I don't know, pick his name, Damian Lillard, you know, like 6'2 point guards. You know what I'm saying? 6'3 point guards. Like, there is not enough 6'2, 6'3 point guards that are dominating the league to say, okay, a 6'6 forward slash guard isn't going to be more successful. So then I start going, like, okay, where would J-Dub go in this draft? Would he go above Brandon Miller? Or is there a top right there that Brandon Miller would go above him? Because in my opinion, J-Dub's already above Scoot. And I love it. I think that just proves to us where Sam Presti's mind is at. Because if he saw Scoot Henderson and was like, see, that's the guy I want on my team. But then he looked at J-Dub and said, no, I'd rather J-Dub than Scoot. That excites me because that's what I would be at this point. I would say I would rather J-Dub in 5 years from now, and I would rather J-Dub in 10 years from now, and I would rather J-Dub in 15 years from now. And anybody can throw stones at me and say, you're stupid. But the reality is that somebody that plays both the sides on the defense and offensive end, somebody that can play at a high, high level on defense, and then probably, which I think he can be, a 20-point player a game player. Are you telling me that Scoot is going to be able to make up for that by his lack of defense sometimes? No, there's no way. You can't make up for that much space right there. And then when we're looking back and we're saying, okay, for the generation, for the last 20 years of the hoops, who's going to have more of an impact, J-Dub or Scoot? And everything, it's obvious in my opinion. It's J-Dub.
I think you're right. I think there's a case to be made for Scoot because of things like his age.
But we still, he's an unproven commodity at this point. He's an unproven athlete in the game.
True, but, and also, like, there's a little bit of a question whether or not it's positive, but playing 2 years professionally before you enter the NBA. Whereas, to me, Sam Presti values players that took an untraditional route. And J-Dub's route, to me, is more indicative of a player like Paul George or Shea, who took, like, who were kind of unknown and then kind of burst onto the scene. Whereas Scoot has been known for a long time, sure. And there's been players his size that were, like, sure things. and yes. They never, I mean, the first, I think LeBron was on the cover of, like, some magazine when he was in high school. And the guy, he was next to a young player who was, like, 6'2", that made it to the league but never ended up really sticking. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And that's kind of the point. Like you, let's take the finals, for example. Like, the Heat just beat Denver. Like, in the NBA, right, if you're expecting to go out and play your A game every game and win every game, like, it's not going to work. Like, to some extent, like, how good you are is how good you are at your third or fourth or fifth best thing. Because, like, they're good enough to take away what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're as good as, like, Jokic, which he's as good as we've ever seen in so many different ways at this moment. And, like, I'm just like, well, of course the Heat are going to figure out a way to take you out of what Absolutely. You want to do. Like, that's what they
do. That's their master plan.
You know, like, right. So if they don't go into it and plan on doing that, or if they're incapable of doing that, then they're going to lose. So with all of that at stake, they come out and they bust out a plan that seems to work. Jokic puts up 40, but the team loses. Well, that's what I get with Scoot. I'm like, what happens when they take away his first and second and third options? Like, Russ, in the end, he did not look very good when he was the MVP and teams were effective at taking away his first four options. Then it was like, you know, if you can get Russ to play outside of what he wants to do, like, even though he's the MVP, like, as another team, you can use that to your advantage. And it doesn't matter how good you are. At some point, you're going to have to play to your weaknesses, and you're going to have to improve those and come back better. And, like, I get Scoot has just been the most dynamic athlete since he was, like, 16, probably younger. The problem is, like, a player like J-Dub is going to stay healthier for a longer career. Like, players don't really do well when they start playing professionally at 16 and then going on to play, like, until they're 40. Like, I'm not saying it won't work out for Scoot, but I'm saying J-Dub's non-traditional route somehow is actually far more traditional and speaks to a longer career. And like you said, you start counting, he has a chance to be a 50-40-90 guy, three-level scorer, incredible defender for four positions. Like, how good would Scoot have to be on offense to make up for what J-Dub has already proven mm-hmm. he can do?
And let's just be honest.
The biggest problem is you question his shot. And if you question his shot, that's the hardest thing to get there when J-Dub's already proven that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, man. I am not convinced that the Blazers would pick Scoot right now. If the Blazers are looking at Scoot and that's their option, Scoot or Amen Thompson, bro, I'm double downing and saying that they're probably going with Amen.
Okay, so my question is it chicken shit for them to go to overtime elite?
Well, like, I don't think it hurts in a weak draft going to overturn elite or going to these other, you know, options.
I like you said overturn, and I'm going to stick with overturn because that's I'm like this
it's
is
overtime
not,
elite
this
is just
bullshit.
Dumb, dude. Like, come on, it's bullshit. It's overturning the traditional way of getting there, and I get it. But you look at what the G League has created, you know, and now what NCAA has created, and it's really made it so that overturn shouldn't be there. And over time, it will be gone. Yeah.
Over time, overturn is out.
But no, I think that I'm looking at it and I see a man and I say, I this type of player is one of those guys that's sneaky, that will come in and really connect with an organization and they feel like they have to draft him. And here's the thing about it is that I'm not convinced the Blazers are going to trade Damian Lillard. So if they don't trade Damian Lillard and they try to keep him to help build this team, this next group of guys, are they going to want somebody like Amen, or are they going to want Scoot? And then I'm telling you, it's Amen is more of a fit for Damian Lillard. Now, if they're going to go and go straight rebuild, you know, hit that rebuild thing and trade Damian Lillard, then yeah, you got to go with Scoot. But I'm not convinced.
So you think Scoot could fall?
I think
to
Scoot
four.
Could fall to four, and I think that's something that people could laugh at. But I listen. Go watch his videotape, Amen's videotape with Portland Trail Blazers. His workout with Portland Trail Blazers. I'm telling you, you can tell when coaches connect with a player. You can tell when coaches and the front office connect with a player. They were so excited about Amen. Like they were just like, I mean, bro, I've seen dads be less excited about having a baby and holding their first baby than these guys were watching Amen play. And I think that's one of the things I watched. And I'm like, you know, I'm a face reader, you know, and I'm watching this and I'm just like, holy shit, did they just, in my opinion, pick Amen over Scoot if they keep Damian? And if that's the case, then this could get crazy, bro. Because that fourth pick becomes one of the most valuable picks in the draft. Because Scoot at four, I mean, come on, man.
So that's to the Rockets,
which is unfortunate. That pisses me off, man. Because to me, like, that's where I don't want. Because that's scary, Scoot to the Rockets.
I'm not
but
scared.
Here's the thing, though, is that at this point, right, it's all about what Damian Lillard wants. What does he want? Does he want to go play at a different organization? Cool. But there's no way that they're drafting a point guard with Damian Lillard, a point guard, who both of them are kind of known for their defensive chill mode, you know? I don't know, bro. I don't see it. And I don't see them trading Damian Lillard because I don't think Damian wants to leave. I think he wants to have a statue there when he leaves. I think that he recognizes that all these guys that spend 10 years in an organization and they leave, like they're not treated the same as a guy that spends 15, 16 years in the organization and retires in that organization. You know, think about KG, bro. He spent what, 12 years, 13 years in Minnesota? Yeah, and then all of a sudden plays in Celtics, right? And nobody remembers Minnesota years. I mean, yeah. Think about it. I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like, if I'm one of those guys, I'm Damian Lillard and I've started my family. I look at Russ as another example. You know, Russ spent all these years in Oklahoma City and then he comes back and gets booed sometimes. And, you know.
Has he been booed? I haven't heard him.
Well, there's always somebody in the stands that's being an asshole or jackass, being a fucking dick.
Like Toby Keith said, we put a foot up their ass.
But
it's American way.
I'm so over it. I'm so over like this idea that this is the way the draft is going because we really don't know right now. Like we don't know if the Blazers are going to trade back a couple of spots. You know, like seriously, like the Houston Rockets could hate Amen and they know that. They could be like, Houston Rockets aren't going to draft Amen. So if Houston Rockets aren't going to draft Amen, we could get him at five. So why not trade with somebody that's going to jump them, which would be what, Detroit? Detroit jump up there, grab another point guard that's probably more healthy than their other point guard.
The amount of money that Detroit paid Monty Williams and Troy Weaver's familiarity with Monty Williams, both as the assistant coach with the Thunder and probably many other situations. But
dude, he paid almost double the amount of money they paid for Frank Vogel.
Okay, so there's so much to unpack here. But, like, first of all, do you take Monty Williams, like, are you utilizing him as a resource? Because I know he worked with the front office for the Spurs. Like, how seriously do you take Monty Williams as a resource in this?
I think Monty got fucked, bro. I'll be honest with you, with the Suns. I think the Suns fucked him. I think last year he made it clear that, you know, he needed somebody else other than DeAndre Ayton. And they said no.
And they forced them to run it back.
They were like, no. Yeah. And pretty much, like, at that point, like, if they pretty much told him, if you can't figure it out, you're gone. And that's what I knew. You know, they weren't going to trade. And it's crazy because if they had traded DeAndre, they probably would have got a pretty hefty pay for him, right? and they would be put in a better position at this moment with KG or KD. You know, like, and to me, like, I keep on looking at this and I'm like, I wish they just listened to him. So, you know, the Suns really fucked him. And that's that.
Well,
so now he's in a position. Talk about he's going to have a lot of power. He's got a lot of say and a lot of sway. And he's got $78 million to back his ass up on this one. That's pretty fucking fat ass when you have $78 million sitting on top of it.
And then Vogel, they get Vogel for
5 years, $30 million. Yeah, it's 5 years, $72 million, and 5 years, $30
million. All right. All right, or so
whatever.
Vogel has the championship, and he gets half the money. But one thing that I noticed come out of this was Phoenix. Booker really advocated for the assistant coach to be the head coach. And they did not go with that. But what they did do was they made him the highest paid assistant in the NBA. They gave him like $3 million a year.
There's two guys that got to become back-to-back highest paid assistants in the NBA. Sam Cassell got... I knew this was going to happen if they're going to keep Musiala. You had to go get one of the most seasoned NBA assistants in the league, which was the Philadelphia 76ers head coach last year. So they went out, got Sam Cassell. He's going to take over the head assistant coach job. He's going to help Musiala figure out shit, which is what they need because they're not going to get rid of Musiala. So that's that.
So what happens, though, for the Suns bench when the assistant coach was the guy they wanted? They're bringing in an outside voice who Vogel has had success, but he has had trouble really getting all the players to feel like they're all on the same page with the coaching staff. So there's this other person that Booker, maybe the other people want. It seems like with a coach like Vogel, you would want to bring in the assistants he wanted, but instead they were like, no, you have to keep this assistant. We're going to make him.
He's just not ready in their opinion. They want him to have a couple more years of experience before they give it to him.
The locker room is going to be pulling in different directions, but and it seems like they just saddled him with a poison pill.
But Frank Vogel, bro, that's different in my opinion. That's why they only gave him $30 million. Let's just be honest. Because I think it's more...
That way they can fucking fire him and the other guy in.
2 years in.
Exactly.
He wanted a five-year one. They said, we'll give you 2 years, $20 million. He said, I want 5 years, $30 million. And they're like, okay, fine. So that's that. You know, like, I don't really give a shit about that except for it's just a matter of time. And here's the thing is... The Suns aren't done morphing this team. They have to trade some of these players to get under that salary cap. So who they have to trade, and it doesn't need to be on the you know new head coaches, the young head coaches, you know, back to be able to carry that. That needs to be on an old ass person that's been down that road before that knows how to handle it. And that's why Frank Vogel is going to be there to steady the ship. And then when that ship is steady, thanks for all the love. Here's the extra $10 million you got for your contract. I mean, like, I don't know what else to say, man.
That's exactly what it seems like. That's what I was like. That's called getting fucked.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have taken the job if I was Vogel unless I could have taken my own staff in. And I know that that's like, well, this team is like, you know, conference finalist level team. Even made it to the finals a couple of years ago. This is a good chance to coach a really good team. But if you can't actually control the locker room, like, think about Mark Jackson and how that ended for him. Like, he'll never get another job again.
Yeah, dude.
And that sucks because I hope he does. Every time that a good job comes up, I'm like, Mark Jackson would be a great candidate, but like he never could control who? His assistant coaches. His assistant coaches had their own interests, and that's what really fucked him. He didn't go out there and fuck himself.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he did, like, but not in that context.
Yeah, but not as hard as he got fucked by like being blacklisted. Yeah. I just didn't see, like, he did maybe some stupid shit, but like they were like coaches recording like workouts like unknown to the players and using that to negotiate deals and stuff like that. Like, I don't know exactly what it was, but it's insane. So I just feel like Vogel's on thin ice coming into a job that like he came in at half price. And
I mean again, it's about absorbing everything for the assistant coach. It's, you know, everybody pulling him in the room and saying, listen to me, this could be a year, this could be 2 years. There's going to be changes on the team. There's going to be people going, there's going to be people coming, and what you need to do is steady the ship, and eventually we're going to fire you. Because, listen, Monty Williams getting $72 million and they only giving half of that, less than half of that, to Vogel. It's just like, it's crazy to me. Like, it proves to you, it proves to me that they don't have any indication or any really want to have him there past 3 years. Because that's $10 million a year. And I feel like for an NBA coach, that's perfect.
I get that they're like, okay, we're a contender now. We don't want somebody to fuck it up. But you got to bet on the young coaches in this day and age. You got to bet on the young coaches.
Even if they fuck it up a year for you guys, you still, like, there's too many of these young coaches with these young systems. And
Eric Spoelstra is a great example. Like, they bet on him, and you know what? It might have cost them a championship. The players felt like it might have with LeBron and them, but they bet on him. And they were like, hey, we want you to coach Pat Riley. He's like, I'm betting on Eric. I want him to be the Hall of Famer. And now we're sitting here looking at it, and we're like, holy shit, they just stole game two.
Well, like, let's just be honest. Like, I feel like the way that we talked about Joker, I watched that fourth quarter twice.
What's up, Blake? You watch it twice? I had to, man.
The first three quarters are all right. Like, I paid semi-attention to them. But that fourth quarter, like, it was brilliant, bro. Like, to me, that was the coaching. What I saw there is what I see Coach D doing, all right, of switching things up so dramatically and drastically in the fourth quarter that everybody's like, where the fuck do my testicles go? Like, where's my fucking brain? Where's my eyeballs? Like, they had no fucking idea what to do. Like, Eric Spoelstra's over there going, and everybody's like, and Denver's like, yo, we smoked too much weed before we got on here on the court, bro. Like, they just look
like this altitude's getting us.
What the fuck is going on? Like, I literally was just like, this is amazing. And, like, we've said it for a while that Eric Spoelstra is just top of the line coach. But last night, like, calming the ship after you've got your asses, I mean, by all means, the first game one, they got their asses handed to them. Steady the ship, went back out there, and changed the game plan so dramatically in that fourth quarter. It just was like, damn. And then on top of that, like, they still had an opportunity to tie the game.
That's right, Blake. Brought to you by the law offices of Vincent and Duncan.
Yes.
Vincent, Duncan, and Robinson. It sounds like it could be partners for a law firm. And really, dude, Duncan, I think he scored eight straight.
In the fourth quarter, man.
And then Vincent, like,
hit that three in the baseline or the corner.
Oh my god, dude! Yeah,
it was like it was the game right there because you had Denver was roaring back. They cut it to three.
You done fucked up.
Then they tied it, and it was just like, what the fuck?
And then whispers of Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero, he should be healthy. Look, as soon as his hand got broken, we said it was like he's out for this season unless they make it to the finals. So maybe give him 5 minutes the next game and just let him get like his feet wet, get his conditioning a little bit. Maybe he hits a couple of shots. Dude. But he could be a big player in this finals. And we're at this point now where the Heat have wrestled control of the advantage. Now, it doesn't mean anything because it could go split. So
they're up 3-0 on Celtics.
Yeah. So, they could, once they stop playing good.
What do you think, though? Do you think that Miami has what it takes?
Hey, what is the finals format? Because to answer that question, like, I know it used to be like 2-3-2 or something like that. Remember? It was weird.
I don't know. Let me pull it up.
They would play a couple at home.
Well, you're talking. You can talk and I'll pull.
And I feel like the 2-3-2 format is why the Thunder never got to see, like, a second round. Like, we lost one in Oklahoma City. Right, and then they swept. They got the next three in Miami, and we never saw them again. That's what I'm like. This could This could be the.
It's what is 2-2-1. 2-2. Damn it. 1-1-1. There we go. 2-2.
Yeah, 2-2-1-1-1. Which is like that's how the normal playoff format is. But for years, it was different. I would say this. I would say that it's probably.
Dude, Miami's got to win.
Take this in six,
Miami's
got
to win both at home. That's their only chance to pull this off because Denver's going to come back and at least win two more.
If they split in Miami, it's a 3-game series. So say they split in Miami, how does that work out?
I mean,
what's up, Kevin?
It's going to be intense. I mean, you gotta win 2 of the next 3 games, and if that's Heat, then that means you have to win 1 against them at their home, and that's obviously you just proved that. But I mean, you could do that, but I don't know if you could do that twice.
Miami needs to win both in Miami. If they're seriously gonna,
if they're gonna win this series, they have to win both in Miami at this point.
If they win both in Miami, they go back to Denver, and they just need to win.
Denver will come back, and they'll be all right. They'll come back and win that game. And the problem is that I look at Denver still winning 2 more games, and that's the thing, is that I don't think there's a way this doesn't go to Game 7, just not.
Man, did you see that response Spoelstra had to Ramona Shelburne? Her question
she's on point 90% of the time, dude.
I don't even think
it wasn't that bad of a question.
But Spoelstra was just like so locked in.
Man. It wasn't that bad of a question, but like, you know how people say read the room? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sorry, but that was like one of those questions that you stop and you're like, okay, yes, this seems like a great question to ask. But the reality is that like domination by a player is domination. Like he scored 41 points on them, and you're like, did you guys win the game because you guys stopped him from passing the ball? It's like, dude, he's the best player in the world 2 years in a row, maybe even this year too. And just like, I loved it, dude. He's like, come on, I'm not falling for that shit. I'm not giving him bait. I'm not giving him any fuel. I'm not giving him anything.
Yeah, dude, talk him up.
That's it.
Dude, he's
41 points.
I can't think of a
night.
Player who's ever been like him in any way. You mentioned it last time, but the old man Sabonis, we heard about him, but by the time he got to the NBA, he wasn't really that player.
His knees were almost all used up by then.
But he was still incredible. Like, he was still incredible in the NBA, but everybody was like, oh, you should have seen him back in the day. And that's what I think with Jokic, his shot-making ability unparalleled. Because nobody I've ever seen, like, his size has the array of off-balance shots that he can go to that... Because the ball, every time it touches the rim, it hits the hole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm thinking something really dirty. But I mean, anyway,
we'll keep
moving,
bro.
Dude. It's just every fucking time it hits the rim, it hits the hole. So
he's special, bro. And I think that he's redefining what people are looking at in the game still. Does it make sense? Like, we've seen guys do this for a couple of years and they dominate the game. You know, and they look really good for 3 or 4 years, and they cement themselves as one of the greats in the you know, league, because they had 3 or 4 really fucking amazing years followed by, you know, 10 really solid years. So for me, I've always wondered, is Joker going to be one of those players, or is he going to dominate for a decade? And if he dominates for a decade, then we're talking about a whole new ball game here, because to me, decade domination deserves to be one of the greats. You know, I mean, like, that, there's not a lot of players in the NBA, if you look back and truly went back and looked at every single one that dominated the NBA, and you look at it and you're like, a decade long, like, that's a good run. Like, what, you know, LeBron James is doing right now is so spectacular because it's not a decade. And I know people hate LeBron, but he's done this for 2 decades long, has dominated the NBA. You know, that's how you cement yourself as one of the greats. Now, I'm looking at Joker and I'm saying, can he do that? And the first step you have to do that is what? It's not win an MVP. It's not win 2 MVPs. It's win yourself a fucking championship. Then you take your accolades, whatever you want to say, take them and you combine them in a nice little package and say, okay, 2 MVPs and an MVP to championship and a championship. Now you look good. Now that looks like you've done something great. But the thing is that that's great and all, but like, you want to look like better than Giannis. So the only way to do that is what? 2 championships. Okay, you get 2 championships and you're like, that's cool and all, but I really need 3 to cement myself. So my point about this is that if Joker has any chance to ever be mentioned in the greats, he needs to at least get 3. And that's where that starts. 3 championships. So for me, Can he be one of those guys? Sure. He can dominate the NBA for, you know, 15 years, and everybody looks back and says, that's great. But if he doesn't have a championship, then what? I mean, the only reason we still talk about Dirk is because he has a championship. Only reason we talk about Kobe is not because of his MVPs, bro. It's because of what? His fucking championships. Championships matter.
One MVP, five championships. Nobody's saying anything about that one MVP anymore. Like, it's all about those championships. So, I'm with you. I think Jokic could do it. You do get concerned about, like, the fact that will he feel ready to commit himself to being that hard of a worker for 15 years when, you know, it doesn't have to be 15 years now, but when, like, that was such a hard commitment for him in the first place, you know? So I think, like, LeBron, like, that was always, like, work being as good as he could physically and that continuing to push. Like, Jokic, if he wants to play 20 years in the league, he can't do it with the body he has now.
He's got
to
trim down. And I know
he's gotten a lot better shape.
He's got to put some muscle on.
But he's got to add a lot of muscle. Like, and I know he can, because if it's, like,
dude, have you seen his brothers?
Do anything for 15 years.
Dude, yeah, his brothers are, like, fucking jacked. He just needs to take a playbook out of his brother's playbook, or a page out of his brother's playbook.
Right. And just, I mean, and I think he will, but at some point it takes such a level of energy and commitment that, you know, when you have $500 million or whatever, you've got all the accolades, do you want to keep going out there and doing it at 38? Like, it's incredible the level of play that it takes. And then will his body hold up, you know, because that's never a guarantee. But at least he plays in a way where, like, Karl Malone, he didn't play above the rim. So he can play for as many years as he could.
15, 16,
18? I don't know, man. Probably like 18, because he ended up second in all-time scoring.
I mean, he might be 20, dude. He might have been more than 20, because he played a couple years at Lakers. The Lakers, I thought.
Yeah, it was a long time. Yeah. And I think, like, that's one of the keys is, like, and Jokic has that going for him. It's unlikely he's going to get injured from dunking on people or, like, landing.
Dude, awkwardly. How much, like, that shit, how much better now do people would people look at Charles if he had at least one ring? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's not a lot of guys that are in radio or on ESPN or TNT or anything else like that that don't have at least one ring that used to be players. And if you look at that, then you look at Charles and you're like, okay, well, they look at Charles as one of the greats, and obviously he's hilarious. But so, you know, how much more would people respect Charles if he had? Would he be known as one of the greatest power forwards of all time? He's already known as like that, but would he be known as more so than that? And I keep on going back to, like, that's why it's important for this Oklahoma City Thunder team. When we talk about the generational team and we talk about the last 12 years that we had for the Oklahoma City Thunder, we don't judge what's happened with how many wins we got. We just don't. We kind of look at this time as like a lot of fun, man. But if you look at it as an organization, do you consider what we had last year with this team, as a successful campaign, the last good team? I look at it like it was a hell of a lot of fun, but they didn't win a championship. KD and Russ and Harden will always be known as what could have been. And I look at this team that we have now, and I keep on saying in the back of my mind, how many championships can this team win? If we win even one, we cement ourselves as one of the greatest young teams of all time. And to me, that's one of the most powerful things. If you look at trying to explain this to the young guys that are playing on this team, guys, get along. Come on. Get this shit done. Work harder. We're not okay with just being one of the good young teams. We want to be known as one of the great young teams. And that's why Shea's leadership and Kenny Hustle's leadership is so fucking important, because they're pushing. They're getting these guys better. They're setting an example out of how to have a professional habit. And the crazy thing is, it's not like these guys are 20 years older than these guys teaching them. These guys are all their same ages. The example that they are setting forth for the young players that are coming through this organization is by far the reason why this organization and the Oklahoma City Thunder in the next two decades is going to be known as one of the greatest organizations in sports history. And I'm telling you guys, 20 years down the line, we'll look back and we'll be like, It has been a blast to be part of the world's greatest organization as far as championships, as far as MVPs, as far as all-stars, as far as all MVPs or all NBA teams. This team is going to separate themselves from everybody else, and it's going to be powerful.
Yeah, and one of the things we hear all around the league, players talking about it, everybody's talking about it, like there's not a lot of vets left in the league. But through this rebuild, we saw players like Al Horford and George Hill and Kenny Hustle, Sarge. Just an incredible group of veterans come in and really guide these young players.
6 years, they used to call vets at 6 years.
Chris Paul.
And this last couple of years is like a vet is at 3 years. It's like, what? What the hell?
Yeah. And that, I mean, so it's all about the youth movement, but they've kept those, you know, those vets around to help make sure the players in the right place. And that's a big part of what we're doing. And that's one of the things that gets us so excited. So I'm pumped up, bro. I appreciate everybody joining us. Wani, Shane, Blake.
Shane.
You guys are the best. Great having you and all your stuff. Archie, Keyland, Pope Card Fits. I hope I didn't miss anybody.
If you did, you know we love you guys.
We got that. All right. We'll see you guys soon.